Hello, everybody. This is Todd Underwood from SIFT, the voice of the food industry, and you're listening to Food Stories, the podcast, the show that highlights the industry that keeps 330 million people fed in the U.S. and tells the stories of the innovative people, companies, and organizations that keep the food flowing to our stores and restaurants. It's a program for people in the industry, as well as those who have interest in how food products are made and delivered with the highest quality and safety in mind. We would like to thank our sponsors who make this show and other programming possible. They are Jobs Ohio and the Ohio MEP. You can learn more about these impactful organizations in the links shared in the show description. Now, let's get to today's program.
3, 2. Welcome, everybody. Today, I'm very excited and proud to be here with Anna Shields, the CEO of Snowville Creamery. Snowville Creamery is located in Pomeroy, Ohio, where they source milk from local farms, grazing cows on their natural diet of grass and non-GMO feeds using no artificial growth hormones. I'm going to let Anna tell you a little bit more, but let me introduce Anna too. Anna's career began at 16 on a dairy farm supplying Snowville Creamery. She's risen through the company, serving as general manager, inventory and customer service manager. And this diverse experience gives her a deep understanding of a dairy and its challenges. As a CEO since November 2022, she has reshaped Snowville's Creamery's trajectory and is committed to a sustainable business model. Anna's appointment also to the SIFT Governing Board has been a big boon to SIFT and our company. So we're really excited to have Anna here today. How are you doing?
I'm good, Todd. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we're excited to have you here. So have you done a lot of podcasts?
This is my first.
Okay. Well, I saw you in a couple of interviews on the news too. So I think you're probably an old hand at this. This will be a lot easier. Well, let's just start with you, Anna, I think, because you're kind of the focus of our food story today. Tell us a little bit about your personal story. I find it very interesting. You started at 16. I also started jobs when I was young, but that's not so common anymore. What got you started at such an early age? Were you inspired, or was there a reason you started working so early at the dairy industry? Sorry.
Yeah, no, I've always valued independence, and so in the form of financial security. And so as soon as I could start working, I started working right away. And so I started cleaning houses before I turned 16 years old. And then from there, I actually got on the day I got my driver's license, I hooked up my parents' 18 passenger van and my horse trailer, and I took my horse to a trail ride where I met the owner, my mentor, Stacy Hall. And so Bill Dix and Stacy Hall own the dairy farm that the creamery is surrounds the creamery. They used to own that. It's changed hands since then. And so I met Stacy there, and she said, you know, hey, do you want a job? And me, always eager to find more ways to make money, said yes. And so it kind of just started from there. And so I'm going on my 17th year in the dairy industry.
That's awesome. So were you kind of interested in, was your family farmers, or was this something new to you, just being more growing up in a more rural area?
We grew up where we had a milk cow at one point in time that we would milk into a bucket and then drink that milk. And so my experience with dairy was only in that capacity. And so commercial dairy farming was something completely new to me. I've always had, like I said, a drive to earn money for myself. And so this was just something, because it was all the hours I wanted.
Sure.
And so it just kind of... Yeah, just kind of stuck from there. And so I was Bill and Stacy's longest employee, and they had been in business for quite a number of years before me. And I worked there for 5 years, which that kind of speaks to the harshness of dairy farming, and that, you know, I was their longest employee.
Story. Well, can you tell us, just walk us through your career a little bit. Tell us maybe some key milestones that led you to your current role as the CEO.
Yeah. So from dairy farming, starting out just kind of on the lowest rung there, doing responsible for all the milkings. And then I slowly worked my way up to the farm manager there. I got pregnant with my oldest daughter, and I decided that I needed something a little less intense than dairy farming. And so I had always worked for Snowville Creamery. Like when they first started, I would come over here in the wintertime when milking was slower then. And work on the production floor and things of that nature. So my employee ID is employee ID number 2.
Very cool.
So yeah, when I got pregnant, I came across came here and said I was looking for something a little less intense. And they said, well, we've got a position opening in the cleaning department, because I had cleaning experience. And so you can be in the custodial department. And then slowly from there, worked my way into customers and orders, and then worked into a management position there. And then I became the general manager at the height when COVID was first starting, which is a horrible time to have any changes happen.
I took over marketing here in January 2020. So I understand.
Okay. You can, yeah, relate.
Great time to start a new position.
Right? So, yeah, and then worked from general manager into my current position as CEO in November of 2022.
Well, awesome. That's cool. You have one daughter or?
I have two daughters
now.
Okay,
same.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah,
that's your big job. I know. I understand as a dad.
Right?
Daughters are quite a handful. Mine just, my oldest is turned 12 and struggling to keep up. So I get it.
Yeah, I feel that.
Can you tell me maybe some personal challenges or professional challenges maybe you've faced and overcome in your journey? Because you've had quite a career and it's kind of cool you've been with Snowville for so long. That has to have been an interesting journey.
Yeah, one of my favorite takeaways from my time on the dairy farm is this. I shared this at a conference and they said, what's your best piece of advice that you've ever been given? And this was mine. When I was working on the dairy farm, my mentor, Stacey Hall, I had made a mistake when I was milking and we ended up having to dump a significant amount of milk. And the reaction from most all of us when we do something wrong is to beat ourselves up. And she said, it's okay. Yeah. Mistakes are the most valuable teachers you will ever have if you learn from them. And so that's kind of been like what shaped me now is when I make a mistake, it's try not to spend that time dogging on myself and think, how can I never do this again?
That's a really good lesson. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I learned, I worked abroad for a while and that was one in a design company. And that was very much that they taught you is like mistakes are very important. If you're not making mistakes, you're actually making a bigger mistake because you're doing something else. And it's very counterintuitive. So it's awesome that you have that philosophy.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Snowville, which is a very unique, I know because Sif works with them, but I haven't got to spend as much time with you other than we briefly had some lunch together at our summit. Can you kind of provide an overview of Snowville Creamery and its mission?
Yeah, so Snowville Creamery is, I like to say, we're the connection point from the farmer to the consumer. So we're in between, in the middle, processing. We purchase milk off of the local farmers and process it into these extraordinary products. And so for me, the best way to describe Snowville is it all comes down to our mission statement. And we're on a mission to enrich the planet, the lives of our customers, farmers, and employees by producing premium and wholesome dairy products. And so living out that mission means, you know, several things. Number one, we pay more for our milk than what we have to by the federal government, because milk is a commodity. And we do this for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, we're asking for milk that's farmed differently. So from being grass-fed, non-GMO, and then A2A2, which is a little bit of a rarity in milk. So, and then secondly, we want to be able to provide our employees with good jobs. Snowville Creamery is a whole person company, meaning just like how I started. So when I came here and I was pregnant, Victoria, the owner, said, oh, well, you know, you're pregnant, you need health care. And so I'm going to add more hours to your plate. And this is really awesome. Important that you have a good life, not only here, but outside of our doors. And so that's what Snowville Creamery's mission of enrichment looks like, is that we put a lot of time and value into supporting our employees so that they can bring their best selves to work here for us.
Wow, what a great culture sounds like to me. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about what you think from a value proposition? What makes Snowville Creamery so unique compared to a different compared to a standard dairy or whatever the term is? Sorry.
Yeah. So, it all starts with, like I said, in the way that the farmers that we partner with not only farm, but the type of milk that we make. And then it comes down to how we process that milk. So our saying when we first started was milk the way it used to be. And because people would try our milk and they would get tears in their eyes and they'd say, oh, this is so good. This reminds me of what I used to drink off of my grandpa's farm or whatever it might be. And the reason why that is because we minimally process our milk. So cream naturally rises to the top in milk. We don't homogenize most of our products. So you see that beautiful cream line. And then we also pasteurize the minimum requirement by law. So we're leaving a lot of those naturally live enzymes that are in milk alive. And so it just tastes better and it's better for you. And so that's one of the things that makes us really unique. And then the other thing about what we do differently is that we don't use any stabilizers, thickeners, or artificial flavorings, which is a challenge in the products that we're making because, you know, we're competing on a specialty scale, but we're also competing in the terms of what people are used to having in their fridge. And so like our saying of milk the way it used to be, now when you say that, a lot of people say like, what, like in the jug? Because, you know, that's what we're used
to. Yeah, it's
to.
What we're used to. Yeah, sure.
Right. So yeah, we do things a little bit differently. And we believe and people don't, we believe a big part and people don't remember what you say, they remember how you made them feel. And so whether it's how that you experience. Try our products or or our customer interactions is that we're wanting to build connections on a sensory note and then also in a community and caring way.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a lot what I learned in some previous jobs, that experience is most important thing to a client and a customer. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. Well, I want to touch on something because it's just such a hot topic in the last year or two is Snowbelt Creamery's commitment to sustainability, because that's highlighted a lot on your information. Can you kind of you guys emphasize regenerative and sustainable farming? Can you explain why what that means to our audience and why it's so important to you guys and your mission?
Yeah. So, I mean, regenerative farming, if you can think of it, the best way that I have heard it summed up is, you know, it's not extractive farming. And so the farmer that we work with practices cover cropping and a lot of other practices that are really focused on building up the soils that the cows graze, as well as the cropland that they farm. And then here on our side, you know, we try and do similar things, and whether it's the way that we run our processes to conserve water or the recycling that we do with our waste and things of that nature, is that, you know, it's a big focus on trying to minimize the extraction and maximize the process for the best outcome long term, not just for here and now.
So one thing you might hear me use this phrase a lot if you hang around me is I like to use my ignorance as a superpower. So I'm like quite ignorant of farming, even though I've lived in areas that are rural. Could you explain just to me and our audience, what is, was it cover cropping you said, or mm-hmm. what was the very first thing? Just to give me the nickel version of what that means exactly, because I'm sure some of our audience doesn't understand that as well.
Yeah. So cover cropping is a practice of never leaving your soils without cover crops. And so Yeah. And so why that's important is, you know, water retention, but also reduces erosion and it's naturally building up the soil, as opposed to, you know, when you pull that crop off, you're just leaving that ground bare, void of nutrients. And so cover cropping, they use specific crops that will put nutrients back into the soil.
Okay. That's awesome. That sounds like a pretty science driven, you know, thing. So that's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about something that's very much highlighted in your materials, your innovative kind of way you approach everything. And that's what you guys call the A2 difference. I'm sure my audience isn't familiar with that. Can you explain the significance of what that plays in your dairy products and why it's so important?
Yeah. So the best way that we describe it is that, you know, at some point, all dairy cows used to be A2, A2. And so A2 is just a protein that's found in the milk. And it's the genetic DNA sequencing of this, either cows have A1 or they have A2. And so people ask us like, well, how do you make them A2? And it's just either they're born with it or they're not. And so for
that's what they say about my singing ability. I mean, born without it.
Mine too. Yeah. That's funny. So human, sheep, goats, and certain types of cows make A2 milk. So the body naturally recognizes A2 protein. And so a lot of people who experience digestive discomfort can drink our milk for two reasons. One, because it's A2, and then two, because it's minimally processed.
So again, my ignorance is my superpower. Does that affect people who are like lactose intolerant, or is it not connected to that at all? Is it just more of a discomfort?
Yeah, it's definitely it definitely plays into the amount, because how your body breaks down lactose is the amount of lactase that you produce. And sure. So different people have different tolerances of lactose intolerance. And so milk allergies is something different. If you're allergic to milk, you'll never be able to drink A2 or whatever it is. But lactose intolerance, certain degrees of it, yeah, that directly influences how you can digest the lactose.
Very cool. Well, can you explain a little bit of how you've, because you guys have a pretty cool product line, and I didn't have any specific questions around that, but how did you integrate this into your product line, this A2A2?
I think it was just more so the original founder was very passionate about, and we are still very passionate about using dairy as the precious resource that it is to us. And so how can we bring the best form of that about, whether it's in the way that you farm or the type of milk that is coming from those cows. And so there's been a lot of research done around A2. We list some references on our website that are great reading material. And for us, it was just more so trying to hone in on that, again, doing as good as possible that we could. And so we saw kind of the shift coming. A2 milk becomes more and more popular across the world. And so I think at some point in time, it's going to be a matter of time before all milk is back to A2.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, now we're going to get to kind of my favorite topic, is because it's what my background is communications and marketing. And we're going to talk a little bit about your brand and your community engagement. So one of the first things I noticed when I started doing more of a deep dive into you guys, and I don't know how I missed this before, was your logo or your mascot, the maiden. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. very distinctive. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that represents to you as a CEO and as a company?
Yeah, we love our Milk Maiden logo. We redesigned our logo a few years ago with the intent of the original Maiden. I wish I had a picture of it so you could see, but was pouring a pitcher of milk. And it was a very much so like a more of a servitude stance. And we would get some flack from it and still do to this day, because we need to share more about what the messaging of our Maiden is. That, you know, the milkmaid, it's the barefoot in the kitchen, like, association. And to us, you know, she's a figure of power. And so when we updated, yes, exactly.
I got that vibe from looking at it. So I don't know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I got three sisters and two daughters, and I got some strong woman power vibes.
Yeah, sure. That's awesome. Yeah. When we redid it, that was our intention. So we took away the pitcher, we put a milk can in her hands. And so she is the source of strength. She is the one doing the work and making it happen. So we love to put her in as many places as possible.
Well, could you get a little more depth at how does she and the brand identity reflect these values and your mission you were talking about earlier? How do they kind of, what's the fusion of those things for our audience?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Milk Maiden, the little bit of research that I've done on it, you know, the Milk Maiden was responsible for not only milking the cows, but also processing that milk and then sometimes even selling it. And so, you know, while some might have the view of like, well, she was, you know, forced to do that, we choose to think of it that, you know, this is a position of power, right? Is that she's taking this very vital nutrient and processing it and then selling it. Distributing it amongst her community. And so when we talk about her, we actually have a little quote that we have written about her that I'd like to read, because I think it really sums
it up. I'd love to hear it.
Okay, cool. I read this in my in our employee meetings, and I sometimes get a little choked up. So Todd,
go ahead. Hey, that's if I get you choked up, I've done my job.
She's a polarizing figure, to be sure. Most recognize her, many love her, and a few truly dislike her. But to us, she represents everything near and dear to our hearts. We are strong, we work hard, we're proud and passionate of the work that we do, and we're humble that we've been given the opportunity to make a difference to people and the planet. Our roots dig deep, our vision rises high. We are the Maiden, and the Maiden is us. Long may she pour.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, the Snowville is a woman-owned company. Victoria Taylor is the owner. And so I think, like, you know, when we rebranded her, we really wanted to hone in on this power that we have and the position that we're in, but also of servitude. Like we said, you know, we do a lot for our community, and we try really hard to make this a good place to work. And so that kind of encapsulates all of what we do.
Well, I definitely want to talk about your community engagement, but before we go there, and again, this is maybe my bias, having a lot of sisters and daughters, and pretty much everyone in my life is female of them. I have a one boy dog who loves mom more than he loves me anyway. So it's kind of useless. Being woman owned and you being a woman CEO, which I mentioned, we talked off air about your kind of other moniker, the CEO. It's very important to you. And I'm just curious if you could expand a little bit on that and why that's important and why it makes you guys so unique.
Yeah. Well, I mean, starting in the dairy industry as a young lady, you know, it's predominantly a male dominated field. And then you kind of have that in the work that I've been doing now. Like, I can't tell you how many times we'll be somewhere and our general manager is also female, and we experience this a lot of the same times, is that like, I'll be out in our yard here and a truck will pull up, and if a male coworker is standing next to me, you know, they will talk directly to him and not look at me, which is part of the course. And so we like to, you know, just embrace it for what it is, but we're also very realizing that this is a fact. And so I'm trying to think, like, in terms of what I can or should not say. But one,
I think, I mean, you're kind of trying to change that perception, it sounds like to me, and empower, you know, maybe girls who want to go into this kind of field that maybe it wasn't always. Because my understanding, and again, here's my ignorance, could be my superpower, make me look stupid, is that like many agricultural things, you're struggling to get workers, probably like everybody else, and you know. And half our population is women. So I think that, you know, to change any kind of perception you can to open the workforce must, again, I'm speaking for myself. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I imagine that's got to be part of it and very empowering.
Yeah. And it kind of comes back to, too. So when the former owner, who has since parted ways, like I said, Victoria is the original owner, that was very much so, a lot of focuses were based upon your sex. And so, like, I wanted to apply for a truck driving job that we had here. And he was like, you can't do that. you know, in this culture that we have, it's not so much about what you look like or who you are, it's what you're capable of.
That's brilliant. I love it. Okay. Well, I don't mean to beat that horse. I didn't make you talk too much about that, but I do want to talk a lot, because again, I can tell your focus, and having seen you speak before, just so everyone knows, I met Anna at an MEP conference where she spoke on culture and really blew away the audience of what she was trying to do, and engagement of the community. Can you tell us a little bit about your support of the local community and farmers as a CEO and as a creamery?
Yeah, I was just looking at this actually before, because, you know, we're fortunate in that we have always been committed to sharing dairy with our community. And so one of the things too, like, we have an employee take home fridge here, is that we keep that stocked because we want all of our employees to be able to take home dairy products to their family. And that's just something that we've always done. Victoria has always done from day one. And then we've partnered with a lot of local food banks. And so just doing, I just added it up in last year alone, some of this through paid distribution, but the majority of it from our own stock, because we really want to enrich our community. So we do a lot of donations to our local food bank, and we did over 500,000 servings of dairy last year. And we're set to increase that by 100,000 this year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and that means a lot to us. A lot of us who have come here, myself included, have experienced food insecurity at one point in time. And so, and as you know, protein is something that's vital to not only us as adults, but growing children. And so we have the opportunity to share the superior form of protein, and we want to do that.
That's one of the big ways.
The other one too is just opening up our doors. I try and say yes to as many speaking engagements, especially at schools, as possible. And then we also have, we're working on a school outreach program that we should be launching towards the end of this year, with the concept of good in, good out. And so that kind of, you know, kind of simulates starting with just the pure form of milk. Good things are going in the cow. As I tell everybody, like, how do you know a happy cow? You judge it based off of the quality of her milk. And so we've got, our farmer does a fantastic job of making superior quality milk, that then it makes our job easy. We believe that milk was perfect the way it was made, and it's our job not to mess it up. So that's just a little bit of our community engagement.
Awesome. Do you have any, do you guys do anything like as a team just in the community that's not dairy related, or because I know you're really or internally like anything like that?
We haven't yet. I would like to start something like that. You know, whether it's a community cleanup day or things of that
Really hard
nature.
with the
It
workforce issues
is.
too, I know.
It is. I mean, we support and ways in terms of like, you know, for some of our employees. So we get requests for fundraisers, you know, gift baskets and things of that nature. And so we say yes to a lot of things.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure you do. Well, this kind of brings us to kind of the next segue I wanted to talk a little bit about, because we are Food Stories, and a big portion of our audience is food industry professionals. And as you know, that's a huge scope. When I joined SIFT 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I didn't know anything about where the food came from, but I didn't know all that went into it and what a huge scope and industry it was, even in Ohio, excuse me, and beyond. So what I'd like to maybe you could share with us some of the maybe the significant challenges you guys have faced as a company, and maybe how you've overcome them. You know, you don't have to get too detailed if you don't want. I don't want you to have to say something you don't want to share, but if you can like share any kind of challenges as a company, particularly around being a food company, that maybe you've faced and kind of figured out a really cool way to get around it or a good way.
Well, the biggest challenge that we have when people ask me, you know, what challenges are you facing? It goes back to that commodity dairy and the milk in the jug. You know, our biggest product line is our fluid half gallons of milk. And so when people think of indulgent products, usually you're not like, I'm gonna go splurge on a gallon of
Yeah, I can see that.
milk. And so being cost competitive is something that's is a challenge for us. And so I'm quite often met with the rebuttal of you're too expensive. And my response is we're more valuable.
Really
And
is how
so
you, it's really how you frame it, though. That's so true.
absolutely, you know, because you can't do what we do and be the cheapest on the shelf. You can't pay
Yeah.
more for your milk to your farmers. You can't pay more to your employees if you're the cheapest on the shelf. And so
Quality
we're
is
not.
not cheap. That's the
Quality is
truth.
not cheap. And I love, we had a gentleman drive down all the way from Cleveland, which is about a 4-hour drive from us. And I said, you know, why did you come here? And he said, quality brings people.
No, that's not bad. Yeah, that's
Oh,
awesome. What a compliment.
yeah. So, in terms of challenges, you know, that's one of them. The other one is in the way that we process milk because we're processing it, minimally pasteurizing it. We tend to have a shorter shelf life.
Okay. Yeah, shelf
And
life is important.
so, yeah, so that's kind of kept us with more of a regional footprint. And I don't necessarily, you know, there's really no way to get around that aside from diversifying your product line. And so we also make cultured products, which have a longer shelf life, which helps us go a little bit further. And then we co-pack a cheese. We have our milk turned into cheese, and that is shipped all throughout the US. And so in terms of food challenges, those are really two of them for us.
Yeah. So I'm going to back up just a little bit. I hope it's okay.
Sure.
Having, again, very little exposure to the dairy industry outside of just meeting a few people here and there, you talked about the price issues with government regulation. Can you kind of explain what that is to maybe who our audience who isn't familiar with the dairy industry and what kind of pressures those are? Because I do know you are very treated very differently than some other people in the food space, being a dairy.
Yeah, it is. It's whether from the regulatory processes that we have to go to from a cleaning standpoint,
Yes.
and then yeah, you know, we're a commodity. We purchase a commodity, and so we have to make our milk, and we don't know what we're going to get charged for it until 15 days into the
Oh,
next
wow.
month. So, and
Yeah.
then you know, you're mandated to pay at certain dates, and so like a lot of the advice that we get is, you know, oh, we'll just stretch out your payables and pay them on different dates. And it's like, no, they all come due, you know, by the
Yeah, you can't
federal
do that.
government. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a commodity. So the government sets the price of what milk is. And many farmers will tell you know, that lots of times that can come under their cost of production, the price that they have to pay. So we pay above what the federal government says we have to pay, like I said, for two reasons. We want quality, and we really believe in the value of dairy farming to our region. And so we want to support the farmers that are doing their best to ensure quality from the farming practices to the way that their cows are treated.
How many local farms do you guys work with, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so right now we have two. It's a family farm and they have a series of farms. And so we purchase milk off of two of those farms. And the ebb and flow of our business has changed over the course of the last 16 years that we've been in business. And so at one point we had as many as 12 local farms. And then right now, like I said, we're working with two of them.
Wonderful. So when you look at the higher level of the dairy industry, you know, being kind of a very forefront of it, what do you kind of see coming down the pipeline in one to however long out far that may be a challenge you are maybe aren't having yet, but things maybe you might be concerned about or you see coming just industry wide rather than specifically
to you? Yeah, I mean, you know, plant-based beverages had a big boom there, and they're starting to fall off.
This is audio only, so.
Okay. Yeah, so the change in plant-based beverages, you know, that was a big competitor to dairy sales. But more and more, year over year, people are drinking less and less milk. We're eating more meals on the run. We're eating, so means we're eating less cereal. And so I think the challenge is being innovative in the way that we get people to consume dairy. Now, thankfully, people love cheese. And so I
do.
Doing
too much.
Right? Everybody loves cheese. So, and then I think the other thing that I find, you know, that I'm curious if we're going to shift more and more towards, it seems like it's coming that way, shelf-stable milk. And, you know, we don't have the processes to be able to do that. And so that's definitely
going to... I seem to remember I had an aunt who lived in Australia for a while, and they had milk that lasted forever.
Oh, yeah.
And it freaked me out, to be honest with you. I remember her telling me about that. And I was like, that doesn't sound natural.
Right.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that either. But that must be more of a common thing in other places, maybe, where the supply isn't as good as we maybe have it here.
That, and you know, more and more here in the US, it's the demand for it just continues to grow, especially coming out of COVID. And so in the institutions and the schools, you know, some of them still can't get the supplies that they need to order in the milk. Yeah. So I see a big shift coming down for here in the US for shelf stable milk.
Well, one more kind of thing on just the future. And let's pitch Snowvale a little bit. Do you have any goals or initiatives or things in the future you're kind of looking forward to doing as a company or CEO that will you be excited to share with us today?
Yeah. So we're in the process of finishing up our formulation on buttermilk, which SIFT has been helping us with. And so I'm really excited about that. That's going to be a large new product line for us because we're bringing in a bulk packaging machine. And so we're going to be able to offer up our full line into bulk products. And so that's exciting for me. Yeah. And Snowville's history, you know, we've not been much on the institutional front because we've been more so focused on retail. And so being able to diversify our product line by hitting more markets is going to be a key thing for us. And then if you haven't ever had our chocolate milk, have you had our chocolate milk?
I don't think I have, to be honest.
Oh my goodness,
with you.
I failed you, Todd.
I got two little girls who probably would crush quite a bit of it.
Nice.
I'm sure.
Yes, they need that. So yeah, I think we're gonna continue to expand our flavored lines. We just our pint products we just launched in 2022. And so that's been a new product space for us. So continuing to build out that product line is what I'm excited about.
That's very exciting. So we'll keep an eye out for that and maybe have to have you back down the line a little bit for a conversation talking about that.
I hope so.
So we can kind of get towards the end of the interview now. I know you're a busy person. Couple questions, I guess, and you kind of answered this already. So, but I'm going to ask you, because I always ask this at the end. You know, we at SIFT, one of the things we really want to make people understand is the careers that are available in food and just generally mentorship all around. It doesn't have to be in food, but of course, food's a focus for us and manufacturing. But what advice would you have to somebody, especially someone like you, who's really risen completely through the ranks, for someone starting their career maybe at a younger age in the food industry?
Good question. I think it's that saying, I love the saying, if you never do more than what you're asked, you'll never be paid for more than what you're asked. Or I messed that up a little bit, but I think it's...
I got the gist.
Yeah, I think it's being eager to say yes and then figure it out from there. And then secondly, the thing that like if I could go back and do my time over, it would be to trust in myself more. There were so many times that I was like, you know, I know this isn't right, but I didn't stand strong in what it was that I knew, because I thought, you know, I'm not experienced here. You don't know nothing. But so when you feel that, listen to that. I think is
you got to get older and realize your ignorance is your superpower. That's sort of
I like that. Yeah, and then one of Victoria's favorite things. Because
if you not if you don't not know, then you're never going to ask the question. So if you know everything, you're gonna ask. So that's what my belief too.
Yep, I agree. There are no dumb questions. And in fact, that's something that, you know, I say is that the most valuable employees that we have are the ones that aren't afraid to put their hands up and say, I don't know, I need help.
100%. And that's such an interesting thing. And I kind of got that a little bit, I think, even from when I first heard you speak is, you know, when we're hiring or something, I want somebody who tells me I can do this, but I can't do this because, you know, and people are so nervous to do that. And I think that is such a valuable lesson. Okay. Well, again, I want to respect your time. What can our listeners and the people who like to follow this podcast, where can they, well, I know they can go to your website, which is www.snowvillecreamery.com. And I know you guys are pretty active on Facebook as well. I think I saw some pretty cool shorts and things like that. Mm-hmm. But how can they support your products? Where can they find your products if they want to?
Yeah, so we're in all the Whole Foods in Ohio and Kentucky. All of the Heinen's stores carry our products, Giant Eagle, Kroger. I mentioned you can order our cheese online. We're fortunate that we have a robust network of people that carry our products. So the best way is really to go onto our website and click on the store locator, and that'll steer you to us.
All right. Well, do you have anything else you'd like to add? Any last quick good anecdotes or great stories? Put pressure on you. You don't have to. No.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, I just, like I said, I want to appreciate your time. I want to thank you so much. And I'm not exaggerating. We'd love to have you back here down the road. Maybe talk about where you guys are at and the changes that you've mentioned are coming, and really look forward to doing that. And thank you so much for joining us today, Anna. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
Have a great afternoon.
You too.
You have been listening to Food Stories, the podcast, a production of SIFT. We appreciate your support. If you have any food processing stories you would like to share, reach out to us at info@siftinnovation.org. And be on the lookout for our next episode coming soon, telling more of these fascinating and important stories. Until then, stay well and stay fed.